It is smoky out there, and the first topic that we're chatting about is how has that affected your protocol, your services? Has anything changed for you? Have you found creative ways to still be serving during this time? It's really just a discussion. I do want to hand off to Nate first, my staff who is over at the Eastside Community Center and what the city has funded or has opened to do during this temporary time. He's actually there in the parking lot.
Hey, everybody. So, I mean, we're over here at the Eastside Community Center. We haven't had a lot of engagement yet, but it was thrown together pretty quick, right? So we all kind of recognized that we didn't have a space for our homeless folks to go and get out of the air at all. So, like, we're pretty jazzed about this. We've also sort of repurposed our outreach team to kind of go out, like, check folks for their health, see how they're doing, give them bus passes if they want to come here so that they can kind of transport back and forth. What's kind of exciting about this, too, is that we have a lot of other agencies like Warrior Vocation and the Medical Reserve Corps that are kind of out here with us that are doing all that good work. Hi, Jan. How you doing? James, did you want me to talk about the mobile clinic now, too? Or
That's the next topic. It's really just an intro that we have this day center. It's from 8 to 4. Yeah. And we're declaring it day by day based on the city. They kind of unofficially told us that we'll at least go until Monday, depending on both usage and the weather. Yeah. We email all the shelters that we know that don't have day centers to say, if you have clients that are going to be discharged at 8 in the morning, can you bus them or take them down there? Rescue Mission sent one yesterday, so thank you for that. And then Bethlehem Baptist was right down the street from us, so I was kind of hoping we'd have more crossover of folks that are sleeping there. But, yeah, we're open, just walking. Yeah, Sherry's team from Vallejo is there. Nate and Comp is there. Recovery Cafe is there. And there's no clients there. Anything you can do to help get folks there? We're going to be open during the weekend at least. And then on Monday, we may call it if we don't have any customers or the air quality.
And then I'm not sure if anybody from Puyallup who worked with the shelter Hello. Out there.
Go Hi. Ahead. Hi, Rob. I just was Hi. Typing something in the chat. So I'll finish okay. that at the end. But yeah, just really briefly. We helped out with that. We supplied some volunteers to go up there. I was part of that as well. We were finding the same thing. On Monday, which was the first day we had it open, I basically leg wrestled one of my guys with a car to go up there and test it out. But he had, you know, he has significant breathing issues and things like that. He went up there and stayed for about a half hour and then left. I feel like for the Puyallup area, at least, when we talked to the people that we did and we handed out multiple bus tickets and encouraged people to get on there and get up there and take a breather, I will tell you that I think part of it is they did not want to leave their encampments and their belongings and things like that to go to a place that wasn't going to be like necessarily an overnight stay. I think most of them stayed in their tents. Protected their personal belongings, and most of them didn't really realize just how significant the air quality could be to somebody with breathing difficulties and things of that nature. I think it is a lack of information and understanding by the homeless population. I believe that they just were not comfortable leaving their tents and going up to a place that was way out of their area, normal area, for something that would end at 4 o'clock. I that's part of what I think was the issue. So it was put together well, though. I have to tell you that Ivan, you know, he was contacting people on the weekend. We were getting this thing set up. We did keep it open Monday through Wednesday. The Pierce County Parks, they were fantastic to deal with. They have a fogging, one of those backpack fogger things. They were disinfecting, even though there weren't people there, every couple of hours. They made sure that we were comfortable, had everything we need, put fans up, worked with us. So I believe that if there was another opportunity for something for us to be able to do that, I think that was an excellent place to do that. It just may involve more with our folks anyway, us literally taking a van and driving people to that location. I think that would have been a little bit more comfortable to people. But it was excellent. I thought everybody, the nursing corps and the health department, I thought it just went really well.
Yeah, I wanted to pile in a little bit on that. I think that there is definitely a lack of understanding in the community of the extent of the risk, given the climate, given the sort of circumstances that people are finding themselves in outside. It is really hard to ask folks to leave their things, to leave their pets, because there isn't a place here for them. Like, I think we're on our heels here, right? Where if we were ahead of this, if we had had a plan ahead of time, if we'd had like weeks or maybe some kind of plan ahead of time to be like, hey, we understand that there's the possibility for this. When this happens, our contingency will be, we're going to use this location. We're going to have access to these types of storage options for folks so they can come with their things so that we could be meeting our clients in a way that is just a touch more supportive. Cause it's awesome that we were able to pull this together. And I don't want to underlie that. Like, this is something from nothing and like no time, which is great. But I think in the future, cause we know this is going to keep happening with climate change, it'd be really beneficial to have like a plan for storage for people's things in addition to a place for them to go to get out of the elements.
I would throw out though, there's also some other component also must be at play, because the folks in shelter already have to limit their supplies and follow the rules of shelter. And we're not getting the shelter providers that don't have day services to get their clients over. And Bethlehem Baptist, again, is like a couple of blocks down the street. And so I'm not sure what the hiccup is on those. I get it with the encampments, but there's also something else that we haven't been able to bridge the gap on, those that are sleeping in shelter but don't have a place to go during the day. And they don't have all their belongings as well.
Excuse me, this is Angela from Bethlehem Family Shelter. We are 24 hours, so our guests do not have to leave. So that might be the reason why you're not getting most of our guests, especially since we're right down the street. But I can still let them know, to let their people know that they do know, that don't have a place to be, you know, 24 hours, to come on out there and, you know, utilize those resources as well.
And James, we're going to take a crew out this afternoon. We had some prior engagements. I think part of the challenge was that it came together so quickly. As Nathan said, to his point, there wasn't a ton of planning. And obviously, it's a state emergency that we're in right now with this. So I get the unpreparedness a little bit. But I think that anytime we have some type of solution like this, we have to acknowledge that we're going into a community that has a set routine. And it's going to take time to be able to get them into where we're at. And so doing outreach, I think, has been wonderful. CLR has been out handing out bus tickets. But really, for this type of activity, and I said this pretty early on, is that we have to do shuttles. So we're going to try that this afternoon and see what we get.
There may be a couple of overriding issues, one of which, it might be a design flaw. Having to have folks leave at 4 o'clock, why go to all the trouble of taking an hour to 2 hours to get there? In the case of Tacoma, there's no food. There was wonderful food in Puyallup, but no food in Tacoma. And then at 4 o'clock, you got to get out and then go back to wherever you think you might be staying. So I think a design flaw in the model. But the other thing is, I think that there's some, if you tell people that it's unhealthy to smoke, they keep on smoking, right? I mean, they're just, because we tell them as public health officials, it is unhealthy to breathe this air, you need to go where there's cleaner air. And then you've got the added component of an environment that is very uninviting. Why would I get out of my tent and look at the weather and get out there? I think there's probably a new layer of perhaps depression or a mental health response to the weather. I wouldn't want to leave and go out, regardless of how unhealthy you tell me it is. At least when I stay in my tent, I can still breathe and I know my environment. So I think there's not a full appreciation of the mental health effect of this kind of emergency, which is weather, and the inconvenience to the folks that we think we're trying to help. I'll shut up, except I have a wonderful example. This partnership works. Yesterday morning when we were at the Eastside shelter, somebody from the coalition, Jill Fisher, sent an email out to the listserv. The email was, there's a woman with no pants on South 9th and Market. At the shelter, CLR staff, I read that message. CLR staff immediately got on the situation, went to the site, had the resources, and provided direct services to the woman. And only because we have this coalition in place, we happen to be together and talked about it. So the partnership works. Yes, everybody applaud because it worked. the partnership works and we can do other things. I think there's some overriding things we're not understanding about this particular model and this particular population.
So there were a couple of other things that were tried early Saturday morning that some of you know. Pierce Transit did, Ivan and Garrett together, Pierce Transit did agree to provide buses as an option to a space. And the costs were covered by the Emergency Management Center. The drivers were covered. They were going to locate two buses at New Hope, two at TRM, and two at Nativity House. And they would take 10 people per bus because of social distancing. Then the whole thing fell apart because there was no way to follow the Pierce Transit's COVID sanitation rules and clean the buses every 2 hours. And volunteers couldn't do that because of Pierce Transit's liability. So that's one model that, you know, people went down the road on. But to back it up a little bit, I think I don't know how many people went to the city and county and said, what are you going to do? But I went after Allison Needles contacted me and said, hey, what are we going to do? And so after I sent her to Heather Moss, Heather came back to us and said, incident command, you know, we'll have a response. And so, I mean, I think you're right. A lot of people worked really hard, really fast. And even though we didn't have a perfect solution, we had way more than some of us thought was going to happen. Seattle opened a building 24/7. Spokane opened the Spokane Convention Center. I don't know what Clark County opened, but different people around the state use different models. And so, you know, maybe one of the things when we can all breathe again is to do a little tighter kind of after action. And to get in, like Nate was saying, you know, there ought to be something in place. And we said this after the Snowmageddon and didn't really get anywhere with the emergency management people. But maybe, you know, different people, different times, maybe we get somewhere. And there is that sort of in place kind of plan that you just turn to page 45 and this is what everybody has already agreed to do and this is what you do. And yeah. So I mean, hats off to all of you who did all sorts of stuff. And I ranted a bit about race and class, how the Red Cross could put housed people out of Sumner in hotel rooms, but we couldn't get anything for unhoused people. That was within a group of about, I don't know, 15 or so early Saturday morning.
Well, I would say just to help redirect the conversation, I think there's might be some confusion if we start sharing a lot of the stuff that didn't work or that didn't happen, only to say that we were asking the question if there's additional resources or different protocols for the smoke right now. So we're starting to inch into our next conversation about outreach, which Jan shared. But before we do that, is there anyone who's offering something unique and different this weekend to respond to the smoke? Is there additional already existing programs that are opening or more outreach with water and masks? Another thing we were doing, by the way, the city donated a bunch of expired N95 masks that we could take out. So we've been not only going on outreach, but we're giving them bus passes and we have N95 masks to hand out as well. I think we have, I don't know, somewhere around, I don't know, 300 or 400 that they gave us. I saw Rich about to pop in. Berghammer, did you want to take the mic?
You know, we've got 95s, we've got the P100s, you know, various types, and I've been picking these up from Franciscan and MultiCare, things they cannot use at their facilities. And so I was just, you know, going to augment, you know, I see you've already got a hold of those, so I was going to mention that.
Well, do you want to, Rich, just for people who don't know who you are, I want to introduce who you are, where you're from, and then if you are offering those to other outreach teams, then maybe they can connect with you via email if you want to put your contact info in the chat. But do you introduce yourself? I don't think everyone knows who you are.
Rich Berghammer, and I'm the director of outreach at Fellowship Bible Church, but I used to work for CLR and other local agencies, and so I'm just kind of using my contacts here to try to provide resources during this time that maybe others can't find. So, yes, I will put my contact information down below. Thanks, James.
Thank you. I told Nate to share about what we do during normal COVID times as opposed to smoke-induced COVID times. So, so pretending that the smoke goes away next week, maybe Nate can share what we are doing and continue to do, and I have some info to share as well.
Okay. Yeah, so, you know, it's it's our normal outreach. Like we'll go out, we'll respond to folks. If there's like an encampment or if there are people that we find on the street that need help. We respond a lot to business calls, right, through our normal kind of positive interactions contract. And we also are equipped with peer specialists that can help folks that are facing some type of, you know, substance use sort of issues. We're also well connected to all the other agencies in the area. A big kind of innovative thing that we're doing now that we're all really excited about is we have a new mobile clinic program. Obviously, like our clinic is shut down for walk-ins. And so normally we had like walk-in hours 3 days a week. What we're doing now is we're taking referrals from the community and from any of our partners for encampments that have 15 or more or 20 or more tents and people combined. And what we're going to do, we have a van that we load up with 4 to 6 staff. We come with resources from like the needle exchange, food, water, pretty much anything you would need. And we put those spots on the docket for 1 day, same time every week. So like say we do Tuesday from like 9 to 10 at this place. And we're going to come out to that spot for a month. We're going to come out there 4 separate times. We're going to do coordinated entry on the spot. We're going to do case management. It's going to be pretty intensive. We're going to pick clients up and we're going to keep that place on the rotation. Now, what's exciting about this is we always kind of hear folks say that, you know, people are offering services or whatever. We're actually going to do that. We're actually working with our community partners to have them come out, do like STD assessments on the spot, right? Get them the detox same day, right? So I suppose an ask for everybody would be if they're interested in supporting us in that work when we're doing our mobile clinics, we would love to have you along. We're doing the outreach. We're being real careful. We're using the N95s. We're doing hand sanitizing, all that jazz, keeping our social distance. But it's a pretty exciting new way for us to be doing this. We'll also have a QR scan code that you'll be able to like check that'll show you what locations are up on the docket. Now, as part of this, we have an encampment scouting team that will like receive these referrals that will go out. It is over the whole county, yes. So we have an encampment scouting team that'll go out. They'll check the site to make sure that it's going to be safe for us to set the van up, et cetera. If it's not, we'll still respond. It'll just be our normal homeless outreach response. It won't be like the mobile clinic itself. And so, like I said, these are going to be scheduled a little bit further out on account of us wanting to be there routinely over time. We've had great success with this so far. We've had a lot of service connection that we otherwise wouldn't have got because, as we all know, it's building that sense of attachment, that sense of like trust and rapport with our clients. That's actually going to enable us to get through these barriers.
Yeah. So Sherry Jensen asked, are you seeing any of the encampments you usually visit being shut down?
Not the ones we've been at so far. That being said, I know that there's a lot of attention being paid to the 509 Bridge encampment where we have been set up for the last month that had 57 tents at our first count. It's quite a few people split between that encampment and a nearby encampment. There was just a car accident down there near the Tagro, so the heat's kind of on. So I would wager that one will be adjusted in some way. But no, we haven't seen a lot of like camp clearing or anything like that since we've been out doing it.
Carolyn Reed asked, is the mobile unit connected to 211? And if a layperson calls 211, would this team go out if needed?
We're not connected to 211, but, you know, if someone were to put a request in through our website, through the Pierce County Resources website, of course, we'd consider it. The point is to get the services to the folks that need it in the best way. So, like, we're not going to turn down a referral from anybody if it's an encampment that's large, that's in the county that needs the attention. Yeah, no, we're going to show. That being said, it's not a guarantee that we're going to be able to respond right off. These take time. We're only doing 3 at a time, and the sets last for a month. So if you're going to be placed in like the hopper 4-1, we will communicate that to you from the EST. Sorry, that's the encampment scouting team. The big referral email for this is going to be est@cmhshare.org.
From the work that you've done, I think these are great. So I guess maybe it's really two questions. How many more teams do we need? That's one. And the other one is, as you develop the relationships with the people in these encampments, these targeted encampments, how sort of stable, I don't mean individually, mentally, or anything like that. I mean population-wise, are the encampments, and have you been doing this long enough to determine if there is a population sufficient to be able to transition to a self-managed permitted encampment.
In my personal opinion, this is not the opinion of CLR or anybody else, I think that some of these are stable enough, especially the 509 Bridge encampment area. Like, if we were going to endorse an encampment, I think that that area, the people that are floating around in that kind of area would be the ones where we'd want to try it out with first. So yeah, I mean, there's definitely stable populations, but populations also, like, they also schism, right? Like the same sort of sociopolitical stuff happens in the band society that we see of homeless folks that we're going to see anywhere else. And so people are going to split and move and shift through the area. That being said, yeah, absolutely. I think some of these encampments would be great candidates for that. We have only been doing this for 1 month actively, so we don't have enough time to really have, like, comprehensive data on anything. Like, talk to me again at the end of the year after we've been doing it, and I'll have better, like, a better analysis for you. How many more teams do we need? I mean, so it's hard, right? Like, I feel like we are adequately staffed at the moment for the work that we have. However, there are 11,000 homeless people, right? So, like, we can't possibly serve that. You know, I mean, like, if I could have four more sets of these going, like, yeah, I mean, I think there'd be capacity for it. What we've learned over the last year of sort of refining our process at CLR is that, like, there's so much that goes into getting someone up and running as a homeless outreach worker. There's so much knowledge. There's so much, like, just sort of ways of being that you have to teach folks. It really does take quite some time for someone to be proficient enough, in my mind anyway, to be up and going at this. So I don't know. I mean, more is always good.
And then on the resource website that I keep touting, the PierceCountyResources.com, if you don't have an encampment but you have a referral, you can still do that there as well. There's the phone number that the client can call just for one-to-one. Or like yesterday, like Jan described, we have a don't see what you're looking for, contact us statement on their website that allows you or a client directly to email. And those happen within 2 hours, typically during business days when we get a referral of somebody on the street who needs help, we try to get out there right away. So it doesn't have to be an encampment, but this is just for the mobile clinic associated with the encampment. And now I see Val, who can take the reins for the rest of the outreach conversation.
Yeah, so just a quick overview, just so folks know kind of who's in the community and who is. Everybody's out. So every outreach team that we've had in Pierce County is out. That was started back in when COVID first started up. We had a huge meeting, got everybody back out, kind of addressed PPE issues, all that kind of stuff. So Coffee Oasis outreach team is out. Her name's Julie. She's amazing. And she actually took over Key Peninsula as well, because we had determined part of that meeting was to go through the entire county and figure out what areas were underserved. And the Key Peninsula was kind of like on everybody's radar, but nobody really went over the bridge. And so Coffee Oasis took that and goes out into the Key Peninsula now. Which reminds me, I need to connect them. We have a gentleman sleeping behind our grocery store. And then we have ACT Outreach Team, which is going out for young adults, which is that 13 to 24 population. They also do have centralized diversion funds, which is amazing. And we should probably have folks do a presentation on that, James, here at one of the few very soon coalitions. And then they also have rental assistance dollars straight from the state, $1.2 million. So they kind of have a lot going on, but Devin and that team are just really remarkable and just still serving folks constantly and doing a lot of prevention work to keep people housed. Greater Lakes is in collaboration with MultiCare now. They're actually a part of MultiCare. And so that team is still going out, serving a lot of Eastern Pierce County, working very closely with everything going on out in Puyallup. And all of the sites out there. So they are still out in the community serving folks, getting folks where they need to go, as well as making that connection to the temporary care center as needed. And then Tacoma Rescue Mission is still out for day and night. So they are currently the only team that goes out in the night hours. So that's why I pushed really hard to connect them to the census people, because honestly, it scared me a little bit that they were going out at midnight. So trying to get them out with Tacoma Rescue Mission, if at all possible. So, and they're still taking folks into the shelter if they need to and offering that same supports. And so I think one of the things I think we're going to look at start doing is just really a monthly check-in with all the outreach teams, if not more frequently. It's hard because a lot of times what happens with outreach is when you invite them in to come to a meeting, they all come into a location. So you're taking them directly away from a lot of their work and a lot of their time out in the streets. And so that's not something that we try to do frequently. I will tell you that Parks and Rec has identified locations. And so how it works is when they come across an encampment or even a single person that just looks like they need assistance, I have an email chain that I just send out location, ask someone to take. one of the amazing outreach teams then responds, takes that location, and then pops over to visit the person. And that's been going really well since March, just to kind of streamline everything, right? Like, instead of me calling this and they say, oh, no, that's Greater Lakes area, and call them, one email, somebody owns it, and then the work gets completed. So room for improvement as always, but lots of amazing, amazing outreach stuff going on throughout the county. And the Pierce County can't even take credit for it, right? Like, we don't fund like 98% or something crazy of outreach teams. We just collaborate really well with all of them, because if it weren't for the outreach teams, there would be no point in time count. I work very direct with a lot of the outreach teams on a consistent basis. If you have specific questions, I am happy to connect you to those teams. If you want a list of the teams, feel free to email me. I sent Maureen a list of names and emails earlier this week, so feel free to email me and I will connect you directly to folks. If you need like somebody overnight or whatever, I'm happy to connect you. Yes.
To Valerie and to James, are your outreach teams developing any kind of a GIS map of the location of campsites? Because I've always thought that it seemed logical to me that the places where homeless folks choose to camp in groups would make the most sensible places to try to promote managed campgrounds rather than us selecting the sites.
We have some information in HMIS that we can pull into a report and create a GIS using Tableau. All things I don't know how to do, but there are people on our team who do know how to do it, as well as HUD just yesterday released information on HUD's GIS training and toolkit, I think they're calling it. So I can send that out as well. But that's really as far as where we go. James, did you want to add anything to that regarding your team?
Yeah, we've been using some tools that do GIS. We do field mapping, and we can do our surveys and services right in the field, and we use our phone, and it links to our internal map. We have been doing that for 3 years now, so we have a pretty good kind of information about the flow. We use requests a lot of the time. So as you know, the populations are very transient. They move around a lot. So some of the information is not super useful, but we do get a trend line. We can see where some of the most frequent places where camps move around into. Don't think it would help us like into developing a managed care site, tent site, the camping site. That's more about, in my mind, politically, where would somebody allow it, less than where do the clients want it. It's not even possible to even say, like, hey, this is where they want. Like, they would choose People's Park, and I'm guessing that would not be well received. So, like, it's a little bit less about where they want it and a little bit more about where the cities and counties and principalities would allow it.
A little bit about what James is saying, that I think a lot of the choices people make are where people are not going to run them off, not about this is the perfect place to be. So I do hope there's some thought about where the people can live together peacefully with the community, and where the resources are not so far away that they, or on a bus line, or those kinds of questions are more important, I think, than where people land right now. That's really about where they can land.
Any other questions? I think that I see Rich. I'll get to you one second. Let me make my little statement. And I think that summarized, most of the outreach teams all are still operating as normal. Like, we're still doing face-to-face outreaches. We're still transporting clients when appropriate. We're still connecting folks with resources. We're doing some more creative stuff too. We've had to rent hotel rooms so we could use their Wi-Fi to connect a client with a resource that was only available via telehealth and some other things like that. Just saying, in a generality, most of the outreach teams are still operation normal-ish.
Yes, I'd noticed when you'd mentioned the ability for the county to connect. In other words, here at the Coalition, we have the listserv, and it's been very helpful, very productive in being able to immediately get some real-time response from the community on a particular need. If I am out in the county and seeing a developing camping location, and I'll be the first contact, and then I'll usually go to either somebody on the CLR team or TRM, but is there something like what we have here in the listserv? Because you just mentioned you can give out all these teams' information, but is there some place that it's easier for me to just go to and say, by the way, I have this situation at this location? And
Nothing that I know of. I actually hear them from county employees whose job is to ensure, figure out what the location is, whether it's county property, and then they contact me before they start, like, contact, or if they start before they start cleanup. And so that's my goal, is to get folks connected to the outreach teams as fast as possible before any other action has to be taken. I don't know of anything. I mean, if you go to the county website, you could report it, but I don't know that that's necessarily the step you want to take. I think how you're doing it, or putting it on the listserv, or even just I can send you the list of the email contacts. You can email folks, or you can email me, and I can share with the teams. Like, that's always an option. So, but I don't know of any, like, really fast, streamlined approach for anyone in the community to do the same exact kind of work without having to report it. And I don't know that that's what you want to do.
I'm usually going to team members in specific, like someone from, mm-hmm. you know, search and rescue, and then we'll go out together, that sort of thing. And that makes it immediate. Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks.
So you're doing exactly what I'm doing.
And you could always use the listserv if you can't remember, and you just need all the outreach team managers are in there. And then our agency outreach last email, if you want to hit all 12 of my outreachers, it's just homelessoutreach@cmhshare. I'll put it in the chat box, but it's a blast email to about 20 people, including all of our data people and myself, but it gets to all the outreachers.
As the city certainly is looking at the transformation of the law enforcement system, the Tacoma Police, and I presume that the county and probably some of these local smaller jurisdictions are as well. I think if there are examples from the outreach teams of, you know, really good interactions with law enforcement, that would be a useful contribution to these community conversations and committees and things that are being created and going forward, so that you're able to keep everything that's good. And the other one is some sort of, you know, is there like periodic outreach to the first responders? Some of these fire departments are volunteer across the county. I mean, do they know how to find you, you know, kind of thing?
No, I think so. We do a really good job, at least at Comp and Greater Lakes for sure, to make sure both the local districts of police and fire, and we have regular meetings with specifically police more than fire, but we definitely have meetings regularly. And I'm going to say yes, everybody that I can think of knows how to get a hold of us.
And then the last one was the self-help groups that are active across Facebook with homeless people, some kind of a connection to them on a periodic basis so that they know that you're there, they know the resource there, is a way to sort of help them direct their energy and in the most useful ways. And I don't know if that just becomes like somebody's sort of task on a list.
I would say we do a lot of community outreach. I participate in a lot of community meetings. I've sat back in the day in people's like little kind of communities, kitchens, like where I would go to someone's house. I didn't know I was going to a house, but I show up and it's like six people who have made a coalition to address something in Bonnie Lake or whatever. It's a little bit harder now. I'm getting kind of lost in a lot of Nextdoor and Facebook groups that are not super productive, but I'm always open to do presentations and these conversations right now via Zoom if people aren't meeting in real life. But I would say in the normal times, 40% of my job, give or take, is doing community outreach. So I'm that's one of my favorite things to do.
So we should just email you when we see these needs, basically.
Sure.
Yeah, good.
Well, and that's a good role for the continuum of care, right? And I know James leads a lot of the work with stability and outreach and all of that stuff. So I think that's a good place to start. And then we can connect and figure out, like, maybe we need to have an outreach learning collaborative, or maybe we need to have just a more consistent meeting with the outreach teams. I know I work with Patty from Homeless Humans of Tacoma frequently. I work with her every single year for the point in time count because she is an amazing resource. I can tell you Devin from the ACT team is super engaged with all of the kind of grassroots organizations that are youth and young adults, like Mother of Many and all of that situation. So yes, I think everybody kind of has their little niche in their area. So like Greater Lakes, I'm sure, is super connected with folks who are doing kind of grassroots situations out in Eastern Pierce County. So yes, can we do better? Always, right? Like that is going to always be what you hear Valerie say, is we can always do better. But I think there's a lot of great work happening. And I think there's a way to start to streamline it a little bit more. And I think that's something James and I can chat about and figure out without adding it all to his plate, because I don't want anything else to get lost, as he said.
Yes, hello. I was just curious, what is the current process? So you kind of talked about for the city, the county, identifying camps, outreach to the camps. I'm just wondering what the process is. Like, is there a threshold for when a camp is getting cleaned or removed? And what does that kind of procedure look like? Like, when does it – obviously, it's you guys focus on the county ones, but I'm just curious what that process or that threshold is.
Yeah, so I'd have to contact Parks and ask them to just come out and chat with y'all so that they give you their exact kind of protocol. What I know happens on my end is they email me and I disperse outreach as fast as possible. If they are on county property, it's deemed health and safety. The cleanup actually happens a lot faster. I know they follow all law and protocol regarding notifications, and they connect with an outreach team, whether it be, I think a lot of the outreach, they connect with Greater Lakes and Comp Life, honestly, before they do the cleanups. But I am happy to talk to Raquel. She's my primary point of contact over there, and see if she wants to just come give a basic protocol for how the county does it. I know we can't do it in any of the cities, and so that would be a city-by-city conversation. But anything outside the cities, everything in unincorporated Pierce County would be what she works with.
And I'm not going to speak for the city. I just know they do loop us in as well. I don't know their threshold, but I do know they we work with a hot team, and when they have a spot that has a certain amount of 311 complaints or whatever, we get a notification from a city like, hey, can you guys go address this? But I don't know their threshold. And in terms, I saw, Jan, real quick, we serve, most outreach teams are countywide, so I don't know specifically the regions and geographic, but we go countywide, Greater Lakes goes countywide, the VA is countywide, ACT is countywide, and that's whole county, east, west, across the peninsula. Obviously, some of the areas that have less population don't get addressed as often unless we get referrals to go out and meet folks.
Why is there an overlap of responders then? Because how would Greater Lakes know that PATH is or is not responding to the same situation?
We communicate, and when we have a referral that goes to all of us, somebody will email back, I got this one, or I know this one. Like, Greater Lakes, for the most, like, we're pretty Tacoma-centric too, to be honest. Greater Lakes does a little bit more of the East Pierce work than we do, unless we get a referral and they're busy. I think all of us equally neglect across the peninsula. But it's also on a case by case. If we get a referral, we have a good partnership with the fire department and the sheriffs and the St. Anthony's out there. So if they give us a referral, we'll come out.
Those of you who have been participating know that several weeks ago, Jan Runbeck participated in a meeting with the Greater Tacoma Community Foundation, the Pierce County Connected Funders Group, and they asked if the coalition could be a resource for them for identifying emerging needs and serving as a unified voice on homelessness issues. And the coalition did respond. We put together a small working group. We drafted a letter. It went out to everybody. It was revised, and the final was signed off on by a group of folks who said they wanted to see it. Jan then was invited by the foundation to meet with them yesterday afternoon, and I'll let her talk about that for a couple of minutes. What we know right now is that they are inviting Jan and myself. The coalition designated us last week as the points of contact for the coalition for this conversation to present at two different committees, foundation committees. What we need today and what we had agreed on last week is that the coalition would basically vote to accept the letter that we finalized, which, as I said in the email I sent out, we gave Jan the authority to give that to the coalition, or I'm sorry, to the foundation, with the understanding that the foundation knows the coalition has discussed the issue, has reviewed drafts, members have signed off, but has not actually voted on this yet. Basically, what we're saying in response to the foundation is that we want them to reserve at least $1 million of their coming round, their September 30th round of money to address the COVID winter shelter crisis in our on a countywide basis. And we want 50,000 of that reserved for a human being whose job it will be to take this as a single project and see it through. And we're not making any recommendations about who that person is or where that person's housed or anything else, but just recognizing that we need a project manager for this. And the second is that at least 950,000 is invested in direct response to needs of people who are unsheltered, people who are sheltered, and then our invitation for a continuing conversation. We are not suggesting that the 950,000 come to the coalition to disperse. What we are saying is to the foundation is as you make funding decisions, please put at least 950,000 of these funding decisions, use them to address what we see as priorities.
Thank you. I was very pleased that the foundation didn't just fall on the floor and laugh. When you present something that's not even requested, and then the level of interest was both, not only was it a serious response, but the foundation is going to run it through two separate funding channels. They took it so seriously. The position of the project manager will not be embedded in the Greater Tacoma Community Foundation. They do not hire project managers. So the project manager needs to be or with another existing agency. The sense of urgency was understood by the foundation that because freezing nights and inclement weather is not going to add more shelter beds, because people are, the population size itself is growing because of COVID, and the eviction moratorium will be coming to an end right at the same time. The foundation is understanding all of this perfect storm scenario. So the letter, I think, was extremely well written. Maureen did the main draft, and it was very well edited. Two pages was perfect because we could show it on the screen and all that. So, yes, that being said, I talked about this coalition being highly responsive, highly inclusive. Their issue of social justice being recognized was well addressed. Wish us luck. And by the way, I'm trusting the coalition that we can do all these things that we said we could do. I believe we can. So thank you, everybody.
So I don't know if people have questions.
There was a point. The foundation wanted to know if we were in contact with the county and the city of Tacoma. And I said they are regular attendees at this meeting, the Friday meeting, and that there is really close contact and lots of open discussion. So that was a real plus that we have strong relationships with our government agencies.
And then following the vote, then I will officially notify Linda Stewart and Heather Moss of the action the coalition has taken and provide them with a formal copy just to formally close that loop.
And Maureen, there's a question from Colin. Are you trying to set up a working group for this?
We set up a working group for the letter itself, Colin. Now, if the coalition votes today to accept the letter, then that's pretty consistent with how we move forward. I had not thought about moving forward yet.
We do have to be responsive. And the Matt Driscoll article in today's paper could not have come at a better time. Colin presented an aspect of homelessness to Matt Driscoll, and that article is excellent. I think the timing is amazing for all of this. So thank you, everybody.
All of which, Colin, is to say that working groups are always open. Let's vote if people are ready to vote. And then assuming people want some sort of a working group on this, indicate so in the chat. Or if you're not in the meeting, if somebody's not in the meeting, right now, I'll continue to serve as the point of contact. Just email me and we'll keep the people already who worked on the letter and then add anybody who would like to be added.
And I'm ready to launch a poll whenever we want to go.
Are we ready to vote on this? It's an up or down, yes or no, on accepting the letter as presented. So should the Coalition to End Homelessness support the proposal to ask the Greater Tacoma Community Foundation to fund the creation and implementation of a winter shelter plan? Yes or no? Hey, folks, I've never been on a poll like this. It's 100% yes.
Which means only one person voted?
Oh, is that it? Maybe.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
How many people did vote? Can you tell?
So it's 35 people voted. We had 46 people in the room. So I think that's a pretty strong answer.
All right, folks. Thanks, everybody. No, just following up on Colin's question about will there be a working group? Yes. And please either email me or put in the chat that you would like to be part of that working group.
I gave the report for the NBC report to Pastor Christopher of the Ministerial Alliance, and he very enthusiastically appreciated that and indicated that they are interested in, they're doing a lot of work in homelessness now, and we really should build a bridge with them.
And as a reminder, they are partners in the temporary shelter outreach that took place last year. So thanks, Al.
And we'll talk about that a little bit more under my report at the end.
Just a quick thing. I want everybody to know that there were a lot of people who helped on that letter, but there was one person who really spearheaded and put a lot of hours into it. And I want to ask if you'll give a thumbs up to Maureen.
As always, it's my honor. Thank you.
Well, thank you. And like I said a few seconds ago, we'll go ahead and do the updates right now from the government and other entities.
Yes. Good morning. This is Jeff Rogers. We just want to share this morning that our eviction rent assistance program that we're operating is moving along. Its wheels are in full speed ahead. We've been able to serve 1,004 households through last week, and we've spent in specific targeted rental assistance, not the operating costs or any of those costs, but dedicated rental assistance to landlords, just over $2 million. Ooh. On average, that is just over $2,000 on average per household. As you know, this program pays up to 3 months of rent or any variation thereof that's needed. So we're moving along. We're still working to come finalize our backlog. By this week, we had a goal of contacting everyone in the system who has applied by email for a second time, as well as by phone. So our team has been very busy making phone calls, and there's a big need out there. Just some of the conversations we've been having with almost 2,000 people that we've called over the last 2 weeks, there's just a lot of need. Yeah, I'll leave it at that. It's just sad to hear so many of the different stories that people share about their current situation. We also are still funding hygiene and sanitation services. And through that process, we've been able to provide 2,245 showers. That's a duplicated number because some people come more than once during a week, but we're counting each episode or each encounter as a number. And we're still continuing to provide monies to emergency shelters to provide an additional 199 units of emergency shelter that's outside their normal realm. Example of that is Bellarmine Prep School is being used by the rescue mission to house people at night, and CCS is using a hotel downtown to house people at a hotel. That's just two examples. The other update we wanted to share besides our eviction rent assistance program is that many of you are aware that the Emergency Solutions Grant coronavirus funding that the state has received has been allocated to jurisdictions. Pierce County has been slated to receive just over $4 million. It's actually $4,064,343. We haven't decided what we're doing with those dollars. We're having conversations about how we plan to use those dollars, who we engage in that conversation. So stay tuned for more information on that. Those dollars will be combined with an allocation of emergency solution grant coronavirus funding that the county received directly from HUD that's not passed through the state. And that dollar amount is just over $3.3 million. So the two ESG coronavirus combined allocations of funding coming to Pierce County is just over $7.3 million. So we're working to identify how to utilize those extra dollars. The good news for these dollars, unlike all of the other CARES Act dollars that we've received, is that these dollars can be used through July of 2022. There's a two-year cycle that these dollars can be used. We don't have to rush and spend them by December, as all of the other CARES Act dollars we currently have must be spent by December. So we're really planning long-term with these dollars to have an impact over almost what's going to be just an 18-month period for these dollars versus get them spent in the next 4 months by December. So that's the good news. There's a little bit of money here to help us sustain some of this work after these current CARES dollars are spent up by December. That is our update of what we're, among many other things, what we wanted to share with you that we're working on at Pierce County.
Jeff, thanks a lot for that report. On the ERAP and the county's own rental assistance program, are there significant challenges at any point? I get the part about the difficulty in reaching everybody who has applied, but just in terms of all of the organizations, the contractors' ability to submit their reimbursements appropriately in a timely manner, the county's ability to turn those around, do the organizations have adequate cash flow, that kind of thing?
Yeah, there's
eight of those emerge as issues that are slowing the process.
We with the state ERAP, just, you know, $10 million that we received, and we round numbers, it's more than $10 million, but we just use flat numbers kind of sort of. We brought on some new providers. Those projects just got started running just a couple weeks ago. These dollars haven't been with us for long, and we were quite successful, in my opinion, at getting these dollars out the door, identifying the nonprofits to spend these dollars. Some are challenged. We've changed our policy. We're allowing providers to bill us weekly if they need to, or biweekly if they need to. Historically, we've invoiced monthly, but we're allowing them to bill weekly at their option. Some have taken us up on that offer, or biweekly, and some have chosen the biweekly offer. So yes, we're open to that. I'll share with you that I gave kudos to people. We had a quick team meeting this morning, as we do every morning. And I gave some kudos to the staff that review invoices and do that invoicing work, because they've been working really, really hard to keep our invoice inbox empty, and payments paid. So we're keeping up with invoicing. We're meeting our timeliness requirement, and we're getting our piece of the money out the door as long as providers bill us on time. So we're flexible, doing things more quickly and more timely, or more times. You could ask us four times a month for money versus just once in the past. With regard to providers and challenges with cash flow, we have reached out and are trying to see if some of these providers potentially might be able to receive a bridge loan from an organization to help them. That conversation is ongoing. We've also had some conversations about maybe having one agency who has large cash flow be the check writer of checks to landlords for all nonprofits. So there's different options we're kind of discussing. We haven't finalized. As of now, all of our providers are working their programs and serving people. So we're open to any option, exploring whatever needs to be done to get these dollars into the hands of landlords and have less stress on tenants who are renting here in Pierce County.
So the health department, I see Manu is here.
Hi, everyone. Good to see folks. Yes, a few updates just in regards to immunization, flu season and immunizations. Moving forward with planning, I've been in contact with the shelter providers and staff who completed a survey request form that I developed, and just gathering some information from them that's been really helpful with planning. So thanks to everyone for your cooperation. Right now it's looking like that adult flu vaccine from the state that will be available October, November. So that's what we're kind of using to guide as far as the timeline at the shelters. Right now, I think we're trying to see if we can include any kind of behavioral, mental health, wraparound services, some care packages that include hand sanitizer and masks at those clinics as well. Thanks again for just all the wonderful shelter providers who've been so responsive with that planning. Things kind of change on the daily nowadays with this, and so just appreciate everyone's patience. But we are moving along, and it's exciting. I'm hoping to have those scheduled by the 30th. We aren't able to co-locate with COVID for just logistical reasons and some safety reasons, but for some of those larger shelters, you know, they're on a rotation now for mobile testing for COVID through December, which is wonderful. Some of the smaller shelters, I've been, you know, just passing along information and hoping that they can also get on that rotation through December as well. So contact me if you've, you know, had any issues with getting on the calendar for mobile testing for COVID. But regardless, you know, let's work together to get the flu immunization clinic at your shelter. I'm still working on a plan for reaching unsheltered populations and folks. And so I'd love to get some feedback from, I was listening earlier on to the presentation on outreach with some other mobile clinics. And so I'm open to meeting with folks to discuss how best to also reach unsheltered folks. You know, maybe this is thinking too forward, but just kind of seeing the response from the wildfires and thinking of like what the city might stand up in terms of inclement weather and temperatures dropping, but also trying to coordinate around you know, whatever sort of space is set up for folks who are unsheltered when those temperatures do drop, and then trying to my goal and vision is to, you know, set up a immunization clinic at that facility as well. So obviously that's a hypothetical right now, but at least that's what I'd like to do. So, you know, we don't forget about unsheltered folks as well who are going to be, you know, at an increased risk. So that's it for immunizations planning at the health department right now. I'll keep folks posted. I'm still trying to gather more information and have some meetings just to ensure that we're going about this and in the right way and in a way that includes shelter providers and the decision making as much as possible. So that's it for me.
It's been a busy week with the Safe Parking Network program. I think that we had a really good meeting yesterday with our smaller kind of advisory group. And a lot of what we talked about in that meeting was some of what came out of Tuesday's City of Tacoma study session, where there was conversation about the Safe Parking Network. Some questions were asked along with this report that I did for MDC and that MDC did for the City of Tacoma 3 months back that has now kind of come out. So there was some really good conversation. I would say that there's also really good conversations going on in East Pierce County and in the Puyallup area around the Safe Parking Network. We have really the group. One, I just want to applaud everybody who's been helping out. There's been a lot of great effort from our Safe Parking Network group. We're really getting close on finalizing all of our documents, which is definitely a huge piece of this. As we go out and talk to potential partners in the community, it'll be really nice to have some documents in place so they can see exactly what this program would look like. And if it's something that they would be interested in. One of the documents that we also did was a FAQ. So frequently asked questions. Oh, thank you, Rob. And I think this will be huge because I know in just the application process in working with the Greater Tacoma Community Foundation, this was something until we answered the questions that they had in kind of a one-on-one, this is something they weren't really feeling too much. And then when we had the opportunity to answer some of the questions, common things like, are RVs going to be allowed at the site? No, RVs are not going to be allowed at the site. Who are you planning to serve? What does success look like? You know, until we had the opportunity to answer some of those questions, I don't think this program probably would have gotten funded. So the hope with this is as we look, as I said, for some of those community partners, we're really kind of focusing on faith-based organizations right now. One, because they commonly have large parking lots. Two, because there seems to be an interest in this in faith-based organizations in this project. And three, It also is probably one of the most streamlined processes for working with the city and the counties when it's a faith-based organization as a partner. So I have shared four or five documents with Rob. Rob is going to send those out to the listserv. And please, please, please share those with anyone. It doesn't have to be a faith-based organization, but please share them, pass them along to anyone that you think may be interested in this. I am more than willing, and I will rope Janet in and Teresa and others to, we want to talk to people. So whatever we can share, however we can support any potential partner we want to. Just to be completely honest, after the study session, one, the city made it very clear in the study session that they were by no means trying to block this project, that they were supportive of this project, they're not funding the project at this time, but really they put the ball in our courts and said, hey, we're just waiting. You know, no one's brought any projects forward yet, which is totally true. But they made it really clear that as soon as someone does come forward with something, they're ready to talk and they're ready to go through the application process. I have a point of contact, as I mentioned before. So it's Erica Azueta, who's usually on this call. She's not today. So I am really excited to find a site in the city of Tacoma along with Pierce County. But Tacoma is, I mean, there's a lot of fire and a lot of momentum around this. Mayor Woodard's made it extremely clear that she, one, totally supports this, and two, moving forward outside of the funding we have right now, she would really like to see an RFP or some sort of funding from the city for the Safe Parking Network. It's a great opportunity. I think things are really falling in line for this, but, you know, we just really need to find those partners. I know they're out there. I know there's probably a lot of fear around, well, we have the parking lot, but we don't have the ability to do this. And I think that's where the larger group and on some level, even the coalition, you know, outreach workers, we have a lot of that structure that we can wrap around them. And to be really clear, we also have funding. So we're willing to fund. We have funding in place. We have a funding committee that will look at any potential, ask by these partners. And we have a group of very motivated, individuals that are ready to assist with any Safe Parking Network partner as soon as they step forward. So Teresa, Janet, anybody else from the group that may, Richard, that may have something to say, please feel free. And if anybody has any questions, please, please, please reach out to us. We're really excited to find something. And as I said, this is a full Pierce County project. I also have a contact. John Barbie is my go-to guy for the county. There's great county conversations going on. Roxanne Miles just emailed me back from Pierce County Parks about the potential of using places like the Meridian Habitat Park, which is being used right now off of 144th for, the clean air stuff. And what we know, Janet, and I receive emails from multiple people that are staying at that park, living out of their vehicles, and also families that are staying at one specific family staying at Blue Junior High, which is about two blocks away from that park, living out of their vehicles. So they're out there. We know this, and we're excited to give these individuals an opportunity and a safe place to be. So we're really calling on the coalition to really put your feelers out there, and let's see if we can get this thing going.
Colin, you're doing great work, you guys, all of you guys. Thank you very much. I'm curious, is there a sort of an optimal size in terms of number of cars? I for instance, attend a church where there's not a very big parking lot, but a reasonable size. What would be the minimum number of cars that you would want to try to put on one safe parking site?
I mean, I would say five, you know, I mean, honestly, we're so flexible with this. And I think we have the ability to try small sites. I really, just from research done, I really think that anything over 20 cars would be a lot. That's getting pretty heavy. So I think in my mind, anything under five is, I mean, we're down to talk. So if somebody has three spots, well, let's talk about it and see, you know, let's explore options. But I think five in my mind, and then I would also lean on the group on that. But I really think the number that I really like is that around 10, 5 to 10, because you figure it's probably not always going to be full. Maybe it will. We're really open to whatever. And as I've said before, the wonderful thing about having a partner like Greater Tacoma Community Foundation is they're giving us a lot of flexibility, and they're really looking at this as a pilot project. And we're really going to focus on data tracking, because this data and us being able to show what success looks like and how many people are really out there is what's going to lead to us having more sites in the future and potentially funding from cities and counties also. So
after having visited sites here in state and out of state, I would say that one thing that I've asked is, you know, from your experiences, what is it that you'd want to share with others who are starting a program? And the consistent answer is, don't start big. Make sure you begin to, you know, get a feel for really what the site can do by starting with very, you know, they were saying about five maximum in that first, you know, month or two, and then kind of get a feel for that and move forward in advancing the numbers. But anyway, just kind of throwing that out there for consideration.
Thinking back to Nate's, first of all, thanks for the work. It's just wonderful. But thinking back to Nate's description of the mobile teams, could that model be adapted to provide services to people in safe parking lots? Not a yes or no, but just something to put on the table. And then I think we talked about this once before, too, is like, clearly this is what the Red Cross just did and with the Graham Ridge fire. And so as they're ready to talk about their experience, maybe there's something helpful there in terms of just building more community support, that this is an acceptable model.
And I would say, and I know James is on here, James and I have not sat down and had some good conversation on this, but I know I'm just speaking with Mike Yoder. Mike was initially very supportive of this and very supportive of the idea of figuring out how to get outreach workers that could do coordinated entry potentially at these sites and really leaning on our existing community. And the way I look at these sites is they're very similar to outreach to an encampment, you know, ideally a managed encampment. So I think it's a great opportunity, and I'm really hoping that we will be able to wrap around a lot of the existing services that we have in our community to these sites. And they're going to be bare boned, but it's going to, the ultimate goal, to be really, really clear, and I think this was a big concern for the county, as I've said before, and it's a concern for all of the cities, is our goal is not to have people living in their vehicles throughout the county. It's to give people in their vehicles a safe place to stay, ideally stabilize and engage those individuals, and get them moved into some sort of housing as quickly as we possibly can, and that's going to look very different for every household. But that's the goal.
I'll just say, generally, just to confirm, Colin and I worked together for a long time, and whenever we get permission to have a site, whatever that be, the jungle, People's Park, mitigation, whatever, we send our full forces there, because we have people, we have a captive audience, we know they're going to be there for several days or weeks. While we love outreach, we meet a person today and we start hours of paperwork and we never see them again sometimes. So it would be like, it's super efficient for us to be at these places where people can be, even if it's only time limited. We can do a lot in a couple of weeks if we have the opportunity to see them every day. So you already know, we'll be there, I'm sure.
I just want to say there's a little different focus for some of us who are working with safe parking, in that the state of emergency has not housed the people that were unhoused before it started. And some of us don't believe that pointing people in the direction of resources that don't exist is going to end in everyone getting housed. So from my part, I'm looking at safe parking lots and safe encampments as a possible very long-term solution, unless something really changes about the dispersal of income among us. So we're not at cross purposes, but we have some different expectations of the outcome.
And I appreciate that. And I think that's what's great about this group, is that there's we've definitely created a space where we can, because I think that's totally true. And I think the earlier conversations about 509, you know, these are all things that we know what need to be done, and we've done them before and we can do them again. There needs to be a managed safe site in that area. You know, we've done it before. We've had, that was the first mitigation site, was a stone's throw from there. So, and that worked well, you know, and that was very bare bones. James outreach teams were involved in that and we did it. Was it ideal? No, it was not. But I totally agree. And I would say with the safe parking, what I see this transitioning to is we haven't had a conversation with Sharon Lee in a few weeks, but she was very interested in this project because it may, so success may look like that person maybe getting into a tiny house, you know, the TEM sites. That was a huge partnership that we had when I was down in Olympia. John Brown was running those sites down in Olympia when I was there, and he's running them in Tacoma right now. And we were very successful moving people in their vehicles into the tiny houses. And oftentimes those people would be many of our quick success stories or success stories just in general at the site. So I agree. Success is going to look a whole heck of a lot of different ways. I just want to make it clear, like, this site is not, we will not allow this site to look like, you know, gee, it's not going to look like that. It's not going to look like Ernest Brazil. We're going to wrap a lot of great services around this site, and we're going to be a good neighbor. You know, I mean, that's the ultimate goal. And I think that's what we've learned from programs like Freezing Nights and others. So, yeah.
Okay. So, I sent out sort of my equivalent to a client list. The issues and the, policies and advocacy that either I track or I think we should be engaged in or we are engaged in or we could be. And so if you take a look at that, you can tell me what's wrong, what's missing, that sort of thing. Why is it important? It's important because it sets the context for the direct human work all the providers do. So, and gives you a better opportunity to shape the policies that affect your ability to do the work the way you want to do it. Right now, as we all know, so many of our policies around homelessness are being set by funders. All the opportunities we have to help them adjust those policies so that they work for the people that we're trying to house. Looking ahead to the legislative session for the state of Washington 2021, it will be virtual. And we don't know what the rules are going to be. It is very possible that there will be a highly restricted number of bills that are allowed to be brought forward. This is a big deal because this means that the decisions on what housing bills, what bills affecting homelessness, what bills affecting any of the related behavioral health, the renewal of the Medicaid waiver, all those kinds of things, they're all going to be competing for space in that list of bills that will be considered by the legislature. We just have to keep an eye out on that. And it's going to mean a very nimble and attentive response on the part of our state advocacy organization. So that's really an important piece. Probably the other piece along with that is, even though we go into this legislative session and this biennial budget with an 8.8, I think it is, billion, as an ABC dollar deficit on the revenue side, it doesn't mean we can't get policy that don't have budget implications. And it doesn't mean that we can't get money on the capital budget side, because that's just a different pot of money. So it's very possible that we can get more money into the Housing Trust Fund, and we can get that targeted in ways that are helpful to us. And so it's just, if there is anybody in your organization who has a particular interest in state-level advocacy, make sure that person is signed up and your organization is part of the Washington Low Income Housing Alliance. I'll keep passing on alerts and updates, but, you know, the rule one about advocacy, show up. And so here's an easy way to show up. So, and speaking of showing up, Housing Washington is free on October 6th. And the early registration period has passed for the annual conference to end homelessness, but it's still very affordable. And those links are at the top of my list, WLIHA.org. And you can get to both of those. It's interesting in Housing Washington's one-day free conference this year that there are three separate sessions that speak to homelessness. So I think that this is, you know, an important opportunity for people, and maybe for people who otherwise wouldn't even look at that possibility. You might have board members. You might have staff that can't take a day off. So you don't want to pay a whole registration for the conference and homelessness, but Housing Washington is free, and one of those sessions might be of interest. Adria Buchanan's going to present the new collaborative model, the Free 253, with the Fair Housing Center, the Center for Dialogue, and oh dear God, I always get the rest of the name wrong, and the Tacoma Pro Bono. And there's a whole session at the end about, I want to say functional community support. That's not the right name. Foundational?
Yeah, foundational community support. You're talking about the Center for Dialogue and Resolution.
On the earlier one, yes, thank you. Center for Dialogue and Resolution. There's another session at the end of the day on the foundational community support. And so there are programs, you know, sessions I think might be of interest that maybe people could not have participated in before if it weren't free. So that leads me to, nobody knows what's happening at the federal level unless it happened in the last hour. And I mean, nobody really knows. So there either will be action by the Senate, and the Senate and the House will come to some agreement with the White House, or they will not. And housing will or will not be a part of that agreement. It, you know, hold your breath, whatever. With respect to a report that will come out next week, Michelle Thomas, the policy director for the Low-Income Housing Alliance, will provide us in writing with what she's been giving orally, which is the Census Bureau has put out the Pulse report again, where they basically have been asking, surveying people across the country on their abilities to survive right now. You know, can they pay their rent? Can they, what's their, you know, probability of being able to continue in their housing, that sort of thing. So, Michelle is taking that at the Washington state level. It's about twice as bad as it was the last time that the Census Bureau put the Pulse report out. And everything that Jeff Rogers said earlier about how much need there is on the rental assistance side, how much fear there is echoed by every community that's reporting on the state's ERAP rental assistance program around the state. And it's just people breaking into tears when they find out that their rent is being paid. And I would presume that lots of case managers and outreach workers and housing navigators and everybody else who's engaged in this probably need a whole lot of support for yourselves just to get through the next phone call. So the last thing is that those of you who saw your email this morning, that thanks to Allie, reached out to Pastor
Christopher.
Christopher, thank you. I don't know why I can't get his name in the right order, but I can't. So thank you. In response to Colin's report on unsheltered people. And so Pastor Christopher responded saying, the survey is great information that is needed in the eradication of homelessness. I hope and pray that organizations that work with homelessness can have a virtual meeting to brainstorm on the information provided from the survey, and that we approach the city as a group of organizations requesting that they follow the recommendations based on the survey. And so this is great. And then Al followed that with an invitation to the coalition to develop a relationship with the Tacoma Ministerial Alliance, which is basically the Black ministers across the community. Which I also think is great. My suggestion is that we start how we're going to do this in the follow-up meeting in terms of planning the next meetings for the coalition. And my guess is that there'll be some sort of a working group, a small group to try and frame it. and go on from there. If you already know you want to be in a working group, put that in the chat or email me. That's kind of where I'm thinking we are with it right now, is that we, you know, formally thank Reverend Christopher that this morning in our after meeting, we talk about how do we want to figure out an all homeless organization Zoom meeting, who should convene it, that sort of thing. I'm kind of flying by the seat of my pants here, folks, so feel free to chip, come in.
No, you're not way off track. I'm not sure that I want to support the notion of starting a work group right now. In communication with the Ministerial Alliance, this word dignity comes up a lot. And I think maybe the best thing to do is just ask if we can talk with them about how we might collaborate, and then we can put together, and they can put together whatever seems to make sense for collaboration. I think we just need to explore as essentially as two equal groups, rather than seeming like we're seizing control and organizing it all. Again, Colin, you did great work.
What else have you got hiding, Colin?
I know, right? you know, I think I really, kind of as I was talking about safe parking earlier, what I don't want to have happen is that this, once again, just gets buried and kind of we move on from it. So I do think that while there is light shining on this, we really should try to take advantage of the moments. And I think any type of, like, whether it's a letter of support, anything like that, I guess the question is, where do we go next from here? And that's where, as a community, it seems like there should be some sort of a conversation. I agree with, I mean, no one wants to have 15 more work groups, but I do think that there's a lot of information. Some of this stuff is already happening. Like the safe parking was definitely one of the things that was called out there. But I think probably just as pressing as that is the conversation around managed outdoor sites. And I think that was obviously a key piece of the data that we came up with, just the need for that. So, and I think there's been conversation around it with this group. And I don't know if that's just something where we asked the city and cities and counties for an opportunity to have conversation with them about this, of what that potentially could look like. Really ties in also greatly with the ask from the Greater Tacoma Community Foundation. There's a lot of pieces. I guess it's just how do we make sure they're all in the same room together and that the conversation is kind of in the same direction. I'm willing to be involved with anything as far as any comments, questions, follow-ups to any of the stuff in the report. So I would love to be involved in any conversations that are had with whoever about this stuff.
I don't want to stifle any work group that people want to put together. I'm just saying the first step in approaching the Ministerial Alliance is just sort of informal exploration together.
Yeah, and thinking back to a year ago when the outreach project was done around temporary shelter, and MDC and Associated Ministries and the Ministerial Alliance were all partners on that, going to the Ministerial Alliance and having that back and forth conversation directly with them is the key, I would say, just from.
So Reverend Christopher has asked very specifically for a Zoom meeting of all homeless related organizations to discuss the recommendations in the report and ways in which to approach. Just want to look at it again. To brainstorm on the information provided from the survey, he means the report, and the survey is within the report, and that we approach a city as a group of organizations requesting they follow the recommendations based on the survey. So he has an explicit ask. Al has an explicit ask that is to develop a relationship between the coalition itself and the TMA.
I think what I would suggest is we talk about this at the end of the meeting with the smaller group as we start to drift. I did see Erica and now Matthew Jorgensen from the City of Tacoma, so I wanted to see if they might have updates before they bail out.
Yeah, so I don't have any – I'm sorry, I apologize, James. You set me up. I don't have any huge, big announcements, but we are still operating the clean air space until next week. We're monitoring what the weather looks like. It looks like it changes, it updates every 2 hours. So we're working very closely with emergency management to see what it's going to look like. What we don't want to do is take it down prematurely, and then the smoke that we're anticipating from the east side of the mountains comes and we have to scramble again. So we are monitoring it. We'll let everyone know, you know, when we have some solid determined dates. But right now, we can say we are going to at least operate into next week.
Well,
and I do want to say, sorry, I'm cutting you off. I'm trying to go back and forth because I'm driving right now. I want to express the gratitude on behalf of the city for all of the partners who stepped up and joined us to get this thing going. Everyone that's been out there, you guys are amazing. I mean, I can't even begin to say how grateful we are and how incredible you are for putting out the work. And just whenever we pick up the phone and say, hey, we're doing this thing, you guys really, really step up and you show up, and we appreciate you so much. So thank you so much for everything.
Awesome. Thanks. I'll let my team know for sure. And then again, Vallejo and Recovery Cafe are also supporting the efforts of this specific day shelter. So we did, in terms of our agenda, we did leave out and haven't covered our small group work, which was going to talk about some of the stuff about the feasibility of the future of the coalition. Rosemary.
So I was asked last week to check back with the census people about any effects of the decision of the court. I heard from the census folks that they really don't have anything to add to that, other than that they will be counting everyone, because the court's decision was about the need to count everyone, even if they're not documented. So they intend to work with people who are living homeless to count everybody they can possibly count, and status in terms of citizenship will not be affected by their counting. They don't have anything to say about the extended timeline. They've tried to get everything done so they could get it done within the time they thought they had to. So she didn't have any update for me about that.
So I just, yeah. I want to say that I love the idea of having a meeting with the Ministerial Alliance, but I really hope we can have it here. A lot of us are kind of Zoom exhausted, so that seems like it really fits into the mission of this group, and it would include so many more people than if we tried to find another time. So I'm hoping that we can find a way to even, I agree with Al, it's important that it not feel like we're taking over the initiative, but I think we can offer a meeting space for them to talk about what they want to talk about with most of the people they want to talk about it with.
It's my intent. I agree with you, Teresa.
Looked like Paula Anderson had a brief announcement she wanted to make.
Most of you know about the new mobile resources response team that we've put together. We received funding from the county to do that. I'm so excited. We're getting ready to put this train on the road. One of the things I want to make really clear is that we want to partner with all of the outreach workers. I know I put that in the chat earlier. We've gotten locations from Greater Lakes where we're going to start looking for partner churches. This does two things. It keeps the general public and community from knowing exactly where the encampments are. And then it also supports and augments offering services like showers, laundry. We're going to have food on board to hand out. There'll be coats, backpacks, sleeping bags, tents, whatever we can put our hands on. We will at some point have the chat team, which from CMAR has a nurse practitioner. He's very excited about coming out and doing that. So if you have areas where you know you're going to a larger group, or you can send me the cross streets of that, I'm happy to take that. And then I can try to find a church partner location to set that up in. And the other thing I'd like everyone to remember too, and Colin and I have talked about this too, as far as the safe parking, being able to bring those services to people that are in safe parking. The shower trailer and the laundry trailer are separate and can be deployed separately. You don't have to have the whole big kit and caboodle if you have five cars in a safe parking lot and want to offer showers to people once a week or something of that nature. So keep that in mind. The last thing that I really wanted to announce is that we are having a ribbon cutting for this mobile resources response team. It is next Friday at noon, and I'm hoping people can swing by on their lunch break. We'll have people that invested into it, the businesses, the press is supposed to be there, other service providers, all of that. But I will send out the invitation to everyone. It's going to be COVID proper, so we want everybody to wear masks, all of that type of thing. We are going to have prizes for the three most unusual masks. So get creative if you're going to come out. Send somebody from your team. It's going to be a great way to see exactly what kind of services we're going to have. So I'll make sure that that invite goes out to the group today.
Well, officially, our agenda has come to an end. Many of us are going to stay on afterwards to kind of talk out some of the things we were talking about and what to do for our agenda next week. You're welcome to stay and listen to that or participate. If you have more for the good of the order, we still have 33 people on the call, so 33 people will hear your message. But otherwise, stay safe out there. Go Hawks and have a good weekend.